Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Today is Thursday, May the 1st. I beg your pardon, it's Wednesday, May the 1st. It's 8 o'clock on WDCU. That is Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio on the Internet, Blog Talk Radio on the Internet. That means it's time for the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford Sports Talk Show. Tonight's show, as always, is brought to you in part by the folks over at Players Sporting Goods, 5737 North Graham Street, one of the oldest sporting goods companies in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area that is locally owned and operated by David Butler. And you know, folks, I've said it before, take the time to go by there and walk through the store. There's nothing like walking through a Lowe's, a Home Depot, or a really good sporting goods store. And that's where the folks go who really want to get custom uniforms, custom equipment. But you don't have to be ordering team stuff. They've got all kinds of individual gear for individual players. And that player's call-in guest line is 888-689-4061. Coach Clark is with me tonight on the show. And, Coach, I know y'all had a busy day over at the middle school.
Sure did. Glad it's over.
It is over, and I guess you had your very last track practice today. That's a, you know, it's always that last practice for a sports season. You know, what goes through your mind when you look at this group of kids and know that they'll never be together again as a group on the practice field? And I guess tomorrow's that very last track meet.
And you know, on the next level, not all the kids that run for me get the opportunity to run on the high school level. So some of the eighth graders today was actually their last track practice, period. The high schools here in Charlotte, 2,000-plus size, and, the larger the schools are, the more kids try out. And some of the athletes that haven't quite developed to that level yet, won't have a chance to make some of the high school teams. So the today was emotional for some of them, and some of them they were their usual silly selves. But I always call them together and tell them I appreciate it, because track is takes a different animal. You know, you run. That's what you do. And I thought it would be nice to thank the kids for coming out, because they didn't have to. They could have did anything for 2 hours. Every afternoon, and they chose to come out and run track for James Martin, and it's been a good season for us. We ended up with two losses, and we finish our last one tomorrow, and hopefully we can get out of that one with the win. But like I said, it was a good season for us, and I appreciate the kids even caring enough about track to come out and run.
And Coach, you know, we haven't talked much about track this year, but at a middle school and a high school level, what are the events that are being run for the guys and the girls, the men and the women, when you get to the high school level? What are those events at a track meet?
For the middle school, we run the 100, the 100 meter hurdles, the 110 hurdles, and the girls run the 55 meter hurdles. We run the 100 meter dash, girls and boys. We run the mile, 1600 meter, girls and boys. We run the 4x100 meter relay. We run the 400, then we run the 800, then we run the 200 meter dash, and then we run the 800 meter relay. On the high school level, they'll have a 4x400, so they'll have that. They run 110 hurdles, but they also run. They also run 300 meter hurdles, and they run.
That's a little higher hurdle, isn't it?
Much higher hurdle, and it's a lot further. It's a lot further. That's a different type of athlete that can run that. Just from an endurance standpoint, you know, that's getting it in. But they have that event in college as well. So a lot of kids that excel in that particular event usually go on win college scholarships, because like I said, it's not a lot of kids out there that can do that. And one of our kids signed a signed with the college last week. Aaron did. I'm trying to remember where he signed, but he ended up signing with the college to run the 300-meter hurdles.
That's a fine kid, and, you know, you think about it. He's about, I think he's about the 13th kid who played for us in Martin in some way, shape, or form, who has signed a scholarship of some kind in this past athletic season, 2012-2013 sports year. And you got to feel pretty good about that, Ricky, looking back on a lot of the kids who, you know, we're talking about some of the eighth graders. Tomorrow will, for so many of them, be their last middle school athletic event. Baseball was supposed to be over for all these middle school athletes this coming Monday. They'll play, most schools will be playing a rainout makeup day next Wednesday. But then, you know, Coach, that's pretty much it. And, you know, sometimes I just can't help but wonder if, you know, maybe you and I pay a little bit more attention to it being the last day of the season or the last practice, the last time a team's together. Sometimes I think we pay a little bit more attention to the significance of that than a lot of the kids. Now, I think high school is a completely different matter. I think that in high school where, say, for instance, you play on that basketball, that baseball, or football team, and you start as a freshman with that freshman class, and then for the most part you're going to be together for 4 years, that senior night for that kid where they actually have a formal senior night. And as I told you, I stopped by a senior night advance last week to watch some of the kids that Patrick and I had started as JVs a couple of years ago, getting, you know, their recognition as seniors. It really is kind of a special time. I mean, you know, and it's hard to think about guys like Aaron growing up and going to college. I mean, Lorenz, all of a sudden, Lorenz in 2 weeks will be already heading down to South Carolina to enroll in those, you know, early classes for that. And, you know, time stops for no one, does it, Coach?
You know, that's going to really work for Lorenz. They, you know, they recruited him as a linebacker. You know, I thought he was a better running back than a linebacker. And you know, once they get him enrolled officially, he can get in the weight room, and you know, so he'll be a much larger kid by the time we see him. And I'm hoping we get an opportunity to go down and see him play. I'm hoping that they don't redshirt him or anything like that. I would love to see him play this year.
Well, you know, I mean, he has a chance to go down there and contribute. They did graduate some linebackers, but Lieutenant Coach Clark, I'm going to tell you, it takes a special freshman to step into a college program and contribute in a starting manner. I'll never forget, this was when the Panthers had not even played the first game. And they were playing, if you recall, that first year down at Death Valley in Clemson. And at that time, I was a member of the Touchdown Club that gives the Bronkunigerski Award out, and probably should have hung on to that membership, but it just, you know me, I don't eat lunch, and I'm not the biggest luncheon-type guy. But, you know, Bill Polian, who was then the general manager of the Panthers, came, and they just picked Kerry Collins, and everybody was excited about that. And Polian gave us some caution and said something that I've said a lot and have said it on shows and going to say it again tonight on this show. The only good thing you can say about a rookie is that next year he's not one. And the same thing is true of freshmen. The only good thing you can say about a freshman is that next year he's not a freshman. And I think that's true about sophomores too, because as we've talked about so many times on this show, that – you know, the teams that have the continuity of the program, one of the reasons Duke has been so good in basketball, apart from the fact that they have one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game, but, you know, Coach Krzyzewski's managed to keep his team together. And, you know, yeah, you see, basketball is its own game where a freshman can come in and make an immediate difference. But, Coach Clark, you think about a kid going to play freshman football at a Division One level in the SEC. You know, last night we pointed out that conference had 63 kids taken in the draft, which is 25% of that draft. That's never been done before. It's just got, you know, Ricky, there's a huge difference between an 18-year-old boy who has not been through that training table, that training fitness program for 3 years, There's just a big difference between an 18-year-old boy playing college football and a 22-year-old man who's been in the system for 4 years.
Yes, and, you know, Joe, you remember when Patrick first started working out.
I do.
And, you know, we basically waited for him to get a little older and a little older and a little older. And if you recall, with every passing year, his bench press went up 50, 60 pounds each year.
It
you
did.
Know, and by the time he was walking out of that as a senior, Patrick was benching 300 pounds.
He was, and, you know, you think about it. I'll never forget Patrick being, we call him Coach Ledford the Younger because he and I have coached together at Vance and at Martin. And I think it confuses kids. There are actually three Coach Ledfords in Mecklenburg County right now because Megan's qualified to coach softball and has coached softball before, but will very likely be a swimming coach next year. And, of course, I'm Grumpy Coach Ledford, the kids at Martin. They have two nicknames for me, Coach, that I found out about. One is the Little General, and the other is Coach Grumpy. I think I kind of encourage that Coach Grumpy. But then we have Coach Ledford, the younger Patrick, who Ricky's referring to. And, you know, Coach, he was one of your best pupils. And you've done weight fitness training with a lot of young men. Lou Trosh, who's doing really well up at Guilford. Cody Book, Patrick, I mean, Deke, some of those guys. They've all gone on to have good careers. But, you know, at that point I wasn't doing any lifting with y'all. Patrick came in, and I think we started right around December. And he had his tryouts for his sophomore team, JV team at North Mecklenburg High School. And, you know, Coach Engel, who was his, who's now the head baseball coach at Vance High School, was a JV coach at North. He said that the day Patrick showed up with, you know, that tight Under Armour stuff, he could tell he had spent his off season doing the right types of things because Patrick went from a strong and, you know, fit sophomore to frankly, you know, I mean, he beefed up and got strong in a hurry with the type of weight program that you put him through, and he was a different player after that. And you're right; by the time he was a senior, you know, he cracked that 305, and we were ready to go 315 with him. And you know, that's a lot of weight for a young man to be lifting. And you know, the difference between him as a sophomore, you know, where he was. Doing the two plates, 145, 135, and 300 as a senior, that's a world of difference. And, you know, Coach, you've been that athlete. Let's talk a little bit about that. Were you ready the day you walked onto campus at Winston-Salem State? Were you ready to be a starter?
Yeah, I thought I was. I thought I was, but, you know, once you get there and, you know, coming out of a little place like Enfield, you know, we had on our roster my senior year, we probably had about five pretty good athletes on that roster. And, you know, the other six were average athletes. You know, you walk on a college campus, they've only recruited the best that they could get. So there's very, very, very small drop off. On the talent level, and it boils down to your work ethics. I trained all summer, didn't know what to expect because at the time, you know, this was many, many years ago. That you know, they didn't send you a summer workout and a diet they want you on. None of that stuff. They basically said, you know, we want you to report to. Camp at 190 pounds and ready to play. I fell way short of that 190 pounds. I think when I walked on Winston's campus, I was 175 and proud to be 175 because I struggled to weigh 175. And it was just an active lifestyle, you know, playing every day, you know, getting out playing. There wasn't no sitting around doing nothing. If I didn't have anything to do, I was at the park playing basketball or somewhere training in the weight room training. And, you know, you were talking about, you know, comparing a freshman to an upperclassman. You know, even from a strength standpoint, that upperclassman is a year older, so he should be a lot stronger. but that upperclassmen also know the system. So in the process of you trying to kind of feel your way, this kid has been there a year, sometimes 2-3 years, and, you know, they know exactly what the coach is expecting from them. You have to learn all of that stuff. And so the transition for me was, you know, I had a couple of options. I could go in. I was a little undersized when I first got there. So, you know, it took me about three and a half months to catch up. But I started working. That's the first place I found. I found my room, got my dorm room and everything. The first place I found was the weight room. And, you know, naturally the cafeteria. But, you know, finally, once I got into the groove, you know, you learn real quick in college that that talent level is much, much higher than what you're used to. But some of the same factors exist on the college level as did in high school is that, you know, you can outwork them, you know, and that was my niche. I'm going to outwork these guys. I'm going to be just as strong. Of course, I had to because I was smaller. I'm going to be just as strong and just as fast. And, you know, I'm hoping that the kids that came through our program and played for us, I'm hoping that we instill that in them because, you know, that's all we preach was nobody outworks us. Nobody outworks us. You know, I think, you know, we're one of the few teams in the Northern League or in Mecklenburg County, for that matter, middle school teams, that actually train, lift weights during the season. And, you know, if the kids that left us and going from high school to going to Wake and East Carolina and South Carolina and A&T, if all of those kids will just carry that with them, they'll be fine. But it's an amazing, amazing thing to get there. And once you get there and you get everything where you want it to be, and you think you can relax, and then here come the next class behind you, and they bring in another 75, and knowing they're not going to keep but 25 out of that 75, you know. So it never ends. Football is year-round now, and I think it's year-round. It's going to continue to be year-round for those kids that's trying to play on the next level.
Well, you know, Coach, there are a lot of kids who are playing their last high school events, too. I mean, I was looking in the paper today, and I didn't have a chance to get to a whole lot of high school baseball this year because of what we had going on, you know, with this show being on Tuesday night and Friday night. You know, we were either getting the field ready for tournaments that we have at the middle school, or I was getting ready to do things with my family. But I take a look. There's still a lot of high school baseball being played. And, you know, and if you get a chance to go out and watch high school baseball, That's a lot of fun. And, you know, the schools are about to start their state playoff. As a matter of fact, those tournaments, the Southwestern 4A, the IMEC 4A, and the, the Mega GA 7-3A 4A has already started. As a matter of fact, the semifinals are being played tonight at Jack Hughes Park. Catholic is playing East Gaston, and West Mech is playing Olympic, and then they'll have the championship of that MEGA. That stands for Mecklenburg-Gaston County 7. There are 7 teams in that 3A, 4A conference. They've combined smaller 4A schools and larger 3A schools to have a conference. And interestingly enough, the winners of that can go on to either the 3A or the 4A state playoffs based upon their classification. But that championship will be at an amazing park down in Pineville, Jack Hughes Park, and that will be on Friday. Now, the Southwestern 4A begins tomorrow, and their seedings have yet to be fully determined just because they're playing today to figure out exactly who is going to be the champion of the Southwestern 4A. I know Audrey Kell has already got a piece of that because they beat Providence 4-2, and I tell you something, if you want to see quality high school baseball with a lot of kids that are going to be playing D2, D1, somewhere, some even going to be playing minor league baseball in 6 to 8 weeks, that Audrey Kell Providence game is always a great game. It's, you know, coached by two of Charlotte's best high school baseball coaches. You know, Coach Hignight over at Providence and Coach Bagwell at Ardrick-Hale. I mean, they're just two really quality coaches, and every year their programs are very representative. Every year they compete for that Southwestern 4A conference title, and you know that Southwestern 4A is just a tough conference. Now, the conference that we're more familiar with on this end of the county, the IMEC, which stands for Iredell-Mecklenburg 4A, those pairings have already been set, and tonight Mooresville is at North Mecklenburg. And then the first round has West Charlotte at Mallard Creek, Lake Norman is at Huff, and Vance is at Hopewell. Then the semifinals will be played Friday at North Mecklenburg, and then on Monday, the finals will be played at North Mecklenburg at 7 o'clock. And I can tell you, in that IMEC conference, Hopewell is always a very good baseball team. Mooresville, you know, does a real nice job. I mean, you know, Coach Bruchette up there always has a representative team. Tough kids from the Mooresville City, Lake Norman. Lake Norman always has a real quality baseball team. And Huff, you know, Huff made it to the state championship series last year, so you got to figure that they're going to be a contender. So this is a good event, a good chance to go out and watch some really quality baseball and watch some of the future stars. And not only that, it supports those athletic departments, you know, because at a middle school we have to do it through tournaments, booster club at a lot of places, and concessions that we can sell. They do charge for these high school athletic events, but it's not much, and the money that is raised from that goes right back into the program. That's the athletic department money. And, you know, Ricky, before high school baseball ends, we really need to do a mobile show, pick us out a really good high school state tournament game, just go to it and do our show live from that baseball game, and actually have some of the parents of the players that are playing be our special guests that night. I think that would be a really cool show. Now, you came up with some interesting track numbers today. Do you want to share those with us?
Well, absolutely. You know, we always compare our times, and the best way to motivate middle school kids is to compare their times to what they're doing in high school. So just looking at this area, of course, this is the surrounding areas as well, but we have a few local schools in here that kids are putting up some pretty good numbers. You know, over at Olympic, Huff Olympic, there's a Mark Tindall. Mark Tindall ran the 100-meter dash in 10.74 seconds.
Coach, that's, put that into Olympic perspective. The fastest
that is,
in the world is the lightning run. Who? Lightning Bolt.
Nines. This kid is seven tenths, maybe 8 tenths of a second from breaking into the nines, and just a high school athlete. There's a Maurice Lowell at Cuthbertson High School. I'm not quite sure where that is.
That's in southeastern Union County. That's almost in South Carolina.
Yeah, Maurice Little ran the 221.44. Now, if you remember Bolt, had it just a little tad under 20, you know, his best time. So these are some pretty good times. On a high school level, you know, on a middle school level, that 200, if you have a kid out there that can run a 24-second 200 or 23-second 200, we've had a couple of kids that ran it in 23 seconds. We had an 11 flat in the 100-meter, you know, so they give you some idea how much they have to improve to get where they want to be. But Myers Park has a kid that ran the 400 in 48 seconds. That's a quarter of a mile in 48 seconds. It used to be, they used to call it a run. Now it's a 400-meter dash.
Coach, do you remember?
A quarter of a mile, and you're calling it a dash. That to give you some idea of what type of athletes we have this day and time.
Do you remember when 55 seconds was considered an outstanding time?
Oh, that's slow now. I got kids that run 55 seconds. I got middle school kids that run 55
high school
seconds. I'm constantly saying this, Joe, that these kids are better athletes than we were. Now, whether they are as tough as we were, I don't know. I know that the times that they're putting up, it's way better than what we put up at on the high school level. These middle schoolers are putting up times that we struggle to put up on the high school level. I remember when if you ran a 40 in 4.6, you were considered very, very fast. Now, if you look at the NFL draft,
the linebacker.
Oh, well, he ran his 40 in just a 4.6. Just a 4.6? Well, yeah, when you got kids out there running in 4.3 and 4.4. You know, and I heard somebody say the other night, well, you know, what's the difference in, it's not that much difference in a 4.6 and a 4.4. Yes, it is. It's called a touchdown. That's the difference.
Exactly right.
That is the difference. But Providence Day has a kid over there, Ben Huff. And Ben ran the mile in 4 minutes and 18 seconds. Yo, that's outstanding, because it hasn't been too long ago that you know, we talked about breaking a 4 minute mile. You know, so you know, 3:50, 3:54. That's Olympic time. Well, this kid, if you look at it, this kid is 18 seconds off of that, and still in high school. You know, the same kid is Ben Hoffman, the same kid. Ran the 3,200 meters, 9 minutes and 18 seconds. Right? Yeah, well, that's about 2 miles. two miles and 18 minutes. Ben Huffman.
That's pretty remarkable, Coach. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I could walk 2 miles in 2 hours, and he's running 2 miles in under 20 minutes. That's pretty remarkable. What about some of the field events? I mean, have you got some interesting numbers on that?
Yeah. The record up at Vance, for instance, the record in the disc was 154 feet. And that's a long way to throw a disc. Well, there's a school, Metrolina Christian, have a kid over there, Marcus Abraham, threw it 157 inches. What was a record at one school, this kid threw it in just a regular track meet. In order for it to be a record, it has to be competition. It has to be in a lead competition, a lead meet, that type thing. We have long jump. Kids jumping 22-1. Our kid, Kenneth Merritt, managed to jump 18. Give you some idea, you know, the difference between a middle school and high school kid. So he would still be 4 feet short of what this kid jumped. And this kid was from Marvin Ridge High School. Butler has a relay team that turned in the 400 meter relay. Butler has a team over there that turned in a 42 second relay. They ran a quarter of a mile in 42 seconds. That's unbelievable. There's a couple of girls that I want to mention. I don't want to just get up here and talk about the boys. Over at Butler, Brianna Lee ran 100 meters in 12 seconds. Mallet Creek has a young lady, Jessica Briscoe, ran the 200 in 24 seconds. So she would beat all of my guys. She would basically beat all of my guys. Brianna Lee would beat all of my boys in the 100. Long jump, high jump. We have another young lady from Butler. Butler must have a pretty good track team over there, because their name's on this list. This school is on this list quite a bit. Young lady jumped 17-10. That would beat 90% of the guys on the middle school level. So, yeah, I wanted to give track a little, some props. And those of you that are listening, all of these stats are out there. And if I messed up one of your kids' names, sorry about that. But yeah, go out and look at this stuff. It's some of the top performances in track for male and female in this area of the state.
You know, you look at this list, Coach. I don't think it's complete, and I'll tell you why I say that. One of the things that I think that the high school athletic directors and coaches need to do is pick up that Observer call-in line and report what's going on. The Observer does dedicate an entire section of his sports page to high school events. And let me tell you, this is what's been called in from yesterday, and I can assure you that was a lot more games played than this. And it's just not that hard to pick up the phone and call in and let the paper know what your kids are doing. Charlotte Christian beat Providence Day 2-0. That's always a good game. You know, Covenant Day beat Northside Christian 15-0. That wasn't much of a game. Here's Butler beating Independence in baseball 6-3. South Mac beat East Mac 7-5. Myers Park beat Rocky River 12-5. Lincoln Charter beat Queens Grant 10-0, and I already told you that Ardrey Kell had beaten Providence in softball. There are even fewer scores. I have, Charlotte Christian beating Latin 9-2, South Mech beat East Mech 8-2, Olympic, and I want to make sure that I'm looking at this right in softball. Olympic beat Garinger in softball 39-0.
You're reading it right.
I read it right. That's amazing. Alexander Central beat Inca 14-3. St. Stephen's beat High Brighton 5-3. Country Day beat Providence 9-6. East Gaston beat Barry 13-6. West Mech beat Harding 15-0. And Pine Lake Prep beat CS of Davidson 2. I don't know exactly who CS of Davidson is. But, you know, there's a lot of really good tennis being played. The tennis tournaments are being played around the county. And, you know, all these young people, to be a high school athlete, you know, that they just don't show up and play. They go through their workouts. And so I think that we're going to spend more time on this program. Our producer, Andrew Mertz, wants to meet with us and is going to meet with us. And we're going to create a web page that we're going to have the opportunity for athletic directors and coaches to have restricted access to it. But we're also going to give parents an opportunity to come to that website. And if you want to put something on there about your own child, we're going to give you that opportunity. It's going to be real limited space. But, you know, we want to know who your kids are, and we want you to help us out because, you know, Coach Clark is a teacher and coaches, so we're doing the research for this show really in the limited time that we have. And if I've sounded tired the last 2 days, it's because I am. I was in a domestic trial yesterday, federal court in Raleigh today, and I'm back in domestic court tomorrow. So we're looking for ways to find out more information and get more local people and local stories about local young men and women to be part of this show. I do have to say, you know, you're talking about the female athletes. Nancy Amos of Hopewell pitched a no-hitter, striking out 7 when Hopewell defeated Vance. And my Patriots have always done a good job in softball. They won a couple of state championships over there. They won their third straight Southwestern 4A regular season title. And if you get right down to it, that's softball country over there, Coach Clark. Because Independence is always good. Butler is always good. South Mech is good. Ardrey Kell is good. And so for Independence to take that softball title, for any time at a high school level, you win your conference 3 years in a row, you've done something, especially in a conference that is as quality a conference as a Southwestern 4A. And Coach, I'm sure that you saw that really touching article about Gideon Kapangi, the young man at Olympic Senior High School who was had the potential to be an all-state distance runner, 5.0 GPA, and in February this young man was diagnosed with leukemia. He came back to school at Olympic the other day, and there was a meet where his teammates helped him around the track, and they had to help him, but athletes from Barry, Charlotte Catholic, East Mech, Olympic, Harding, and Providence, you know, stopped what they were doing and took time to really let this young man know that they were thinking of him, they respected him, they were praying for him, as we pray for him, that he will continue to progress in his battle against leukemia. But it took a lot of courage for him to miss that much school, but to come back to his school and to get out there and be part of his track team. You know, it's a really touching story. And Gideon, Coach Clark and I will pray for you, and we will hope that you will continue to progress. And, you know, you got a lot of courage, and we want to encourage you in your treatment and let you know that you got a lot of people pulling for you. And it's just such a tragedy that you know, that when young people come down with these horrific illnesses, some of them that are treatable, some are not, and you know, Coach, you don't understand how and why those things happen, but you know, our heart goes out to all these kids, and we certainly hope that he, you know, gets better and is able to beat that disease. But you know, maybe we ought to call him, see if he wants to come on this show as a guest, and see if he wants to talk to other people and let his courage be an inspiration, you know, to all of us. And, but that was a touching story in the Observer. For those of you that are listening, if you've not seen that story written by Langston Wirtz, one of the finest sports writers of high school coverage in the state and the entire South, another fellow we need to get on the show. So our heart and our best wishes go out to Gideon and to his family. You know, Ricky, I do think that we need to find a way, too, to get our middle school coaches to become a part of this show and get their kids to be a part of this show, because so far you think about some of the things that we've done on this show, that we've had the message that we've sent out, you know, Brian Mack, Judge Horn, Judge Trosh, you know, Rod Smith, Ethan Horton, Coach Jester, Coach Colasurto, some of the really good folks that we, Coach Padgett from Concord, who we've had coming on the show with. You know, the messages that they've had for young people have really been good messages, and one of the things that we need to do over the summer is to contact every high school coach we can get up with, get them to spend some time on this show with us to get a special message out to the athletes that they're going to be wanting to coach in the fall sports, which officially start on August 1st. But, Ricky, those workouts start a lot sooner than August 1st, don't they?
Yes. For our graduating eighth graders, or moving on up eighth graders, the high schools start a week after we get out. It's not mandatory, but I've said over and over that, you know, you need to get up there, get started. The more you learn, the better your chances are getting out on that field on Thursday nights and Friday nights. You can't wait. The mandatory date is usually July 17th, somewhere around that week of July 17th. But they will actually start a week after we get out. And parents that are listening, and you have not heard from your kid's coach at the high school your kid is going to attend, pick up the phone and call and ask for the athletic director. He'll have all that information. We're expecting most of our kids go to Vance. A few go to North, and a few go to Mallard. But we're already in contact with Vance, and I got to get in touch with the coach up at North Mech and Mallard Creek, and have them come by and talk to the kids that will be attending their school. Give them a summer workout schedule, that type thing. They will start weight training and fitness. They can't come together as, you know, 11 on 11, 7 on 7 during the summer, which is as close to, as you're going to get to almost getting a jump on everybody that's not there. It will be extremely hard if these kids wait until July 17th to show up. It might be 50-60% of the season will be over before you've gotten yourself in shape. Well enough shape to compete. B, learn the offense or defense and learn the position and the expectations for that position from your coach. The season will be half over because most of that stuff they're going to teach those techniques during the summer. Shortly after we go back to school, unlike middle school guys where we try out a week after we get back, then we have another 3 weeks to before our first game, the high school is not on that schedule. You know, school come back, they have a week down, the following week they play their first game. In some instances, they will play the Friday of the first week of school. So, you know, don't hesitate. Pick up the phone, find out where they'll be working out, when, time schedule, and be on time.
You know, Ricky, as we talk about local athletes, I see that a young man from Appalachian State, Rod Chisholm, is a former Independence High School running back. They say he's a former Independence High School running back. The truth is he played 3 years at West Charlotte, so he's a former West Charlotte and Independence High School running back. Rod Chisholm has graduated from App State, and he's been invited to the Redskins rookie camp. Chisholm is the young man who Independence was playing for their eighth straight state championship game. It was the season where the 107 wins were streak was broken at I cannot remember the team in Ohio that Independence had a pretty substantial lead in that game, let it get away in the second half. But in the state championship game, Independence jumped up 14-0. And we've talked about injuries. That is during that 7-year run, with the exception of an injury to Jeff Romanelli, the sophomore linebacker who ended up being all world as a junior and a senior before he had some of his issues, Independence didn't have a major injury until that eighth season. And the tight end, in the last play of a scrimmage before, competitive scrimmage before they started their regular season, they lost their tight end for the entire season. And then in the first quarter of that state championship game, Chisholm, who I believe had already scored two touchdowns, had an ankle injury, a very major ankle injury that precluded him from coming back into the ball game. And Independence ended up losing that state championship game to Southview, I believe it was. And Southview was a team that they actually beat for their first when Chris Leake was a sophomore. And it broke the run of state championships that Independence had. But I see that Chisholm has got an opportunity to go try to, earn his way onto one of your teams, the Washington Redskins. And I also see that, there's some – the Panthers have signed some unrestricted free agents to go to their rookie camp, mini camp, May 10th and 12th, which will be next. May 10th and 12th. Let's see, that'll be next Friday and Saturday, and those guys are a defensive end from Michigan. We probably saw him play back in September. Craig Rowe, DeMario Jeffrey, a linebacker out of South Carolina. Robert Lester, a defensive back out of Alabama. Colby Cameron, quarterback out of Louisiana Tech. Taylor Cook, tight end out of Rice. Melvin White, defensive back out of Louisiana Lafayette. Mike Zordich, fullback out of Penn State. Torrey Mobley, a guard out of Jacksonville State. Trey Diller, wide receiver out of Sam Houston State. Wes Horton, a defensive end out of Southern California. Morgan Lineberry, a kicker out of Abilene Christian. Good to see they got somebody out there. Hopefully they can take a look at kicking. Casey Walker, defensive tackle out of Oklahoma, and Robert Jones, a guard out of East Carolina. They also signed a free agent tight end Brandon Williams from Oregon on Monday. So, a lot of times it is amazing how many guys that are not drafted end up on an NFL roster. And so, there are a lot of players who don't get drafted who have an opportunity to go and try to make one of the NFL clubs. And Ricky, I wouldn't be surprised if three or four of these guys don't end up making that Panther roster, and some of them may actually contribute. A lot of guys have an opportunity as the undrafted free agents to win that positions, and they go into that knowing that they're not going to get a guaranteed. Well, I mean they'll be paid for their trial period. But, they know they don't have that guaranteed spot on that roster, and a hungry man is a dangerous man. That athletics is brutal. It's a sport where, in some ways, you kind of have to hope that your roommate might get an injury so you can slide into that spot. You don't want to see your friend or your teammate get injured, but you have to be ready to take advantage if that does come up. And so I got a call or a text from Ethan Horton today. He, because Ethan was on our draft show one week ago tonight, and he agreed with you that the Panthers needed to go wide receiver, and he texted me wanting to know what I had thought about, the Panthers, defensive draft, and they went those five drafts that they had. They went defense on three of them, and so I think that they're making a commitment to making their defense better. And if you take a look at the non-drafted free agents they've signed, we've got a defensive end, a defensive back, defensive end and defensive tackle. So they've added five more guys to the mix who are going to try to compete for that those roster spots for the Panthers. So I think it's pretty clear, Coach, that the Panthers have agreed with Rod Smith that they want to get better defensively in a hurry.
So maybe I'm missing something, and but I doubt it. But I remember a bunch of three and outs. I remember you and I sitting saying, if you can't go get me 1 yard, I need 1 yard to keep the ball. If you can't go get me 1 yard, my defense is going to be right back out here. And I'm hoping that they're still out. I'm hoping that they're still out looking for offensive linemen, because there were times when, you know, our line was being shoved back into Cam's lap, you know, and you're watching the game and say, well, okay, well this kid weighs 295, well the kid that's shoving him back weighs 285. You know, it's not, you know, just going out getting big, because, you know, there were teams we played that across our offensive line, we were much larger than they are, than they were. And the results were the end results were the exact same. And I know the old adage, if you don't score, you can't beat me. But if I don't score, I can't beat you either. I gotta be able to score the ball as well, and I'm hoping that there's something that we've missed. We saw just a glance of a more sophisticated offense for a couple of games, a couple of plays that Cam ran during the season, and you know everybody said that's what he's supposed to be doing. This is the offense that he works best out of. Yeah, but the plays that we saw took a little bit more time in the backfield to develop, and the Panthers never had that kind of time for any play that took longer to develop than just a straight dive. It just didn't.
Coach, I'm going to tell you what I think has happened to football analysis, and this is probably going to make some listeners angry, but I think that fantasy football has made everybody into an armchair general manager. Because I'm constantly hearing people say that on defense, you got to get your secondary better. On offense, people talk about getting wide receivers, and this is where not just talking just about the Panthers, because I got your point. I got Ethan's point last week about Trayvon Austin and what he might bring. But Ricky, I'm going to tell you, here's what the Panthers need to do to get better defensively, okay? First, they need to get better on special teams, okay? Kickoff return, punt, and kickoff, okay? Their punt and their kickoff teams have to be so much better that they create long fields for the offense. Most plays, most series of downs, in the NFL are stopped because of a penalty. You know that? Ethan was right. You don't see a whole lot of college-style, high school-style 12, 15-play drives in the NFL. That's not what it's about. It really is about field position, because field position is about logistics, and the amateur talks about the tactics, what play we're going to call. Now, it's about the logistics of where you are on the field, and more importantly, where they are on the field. Because if they're playing inside their 30, inside their 20, their offensive philosophy out of necessity has to be modified, that they have to go to a more, protect the ball type mode. So if you want to get better on defense, get better on special teams, okay? If you want your secondary to be better, you don't get your secondary better by picking better secondary people. The truth of the matter is receivers have the advantage because they know the route and they know the count, okay? So there are two things that they know on offense that you don't as a defensive player. The way you stop the forward pass is by pressuring the ball where the ball is most vulnerable, and that is in the offensive backfield. And if you can do that with four linemen and you don't have to bring a strong safety up, if you can win that line of scrimmage, you're ahead of the game. Now, Coach, I'll tell you, and I'm rambling on, and I'm going to give you a chance in just a minute. If you want to get better on offense, people say the league's a it's a passing league, it's a passing league, it's a passing league. And I say to that, wrong, wrong, wrong. Football always has been. It always will be dictated by your ability to run the football. Teams throw the ball because they have to. Okay? Most passes, you think about it, you hear the analysts say, well, they're in a passing situation. Why are they in a passing situation? Because on first and second down, they weren't able to run the ball to keep them out of a passing situation. The game has not changed. It's still played on a 100-yard field. It's still 160 feet wide. A first down is still 10 yards. And if you can get 70% of that running the football, you're going to win 12 to 13 games in the NFL a year. You know, if you think I'm wrong on any of those things that I said about what the Panthers, or not just the Panthers, but any team need to do, tell me where I'm wrong.
Joe, you're not. You're not. If I can run the football, you will have a long day. If I can pick up 3-4 yards every time I run the ball, you're going to be in for a long day. I'm going to cut down on how many possessions you have. I'm going to cut down on how many possessions you have because every time I get the football, I'm going to keep it 5-6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Not before quarters in the game.
That's right.
I'm
going to
keep it 5 or 6 minutes, running it down your throat. Eventually, you're going to have to make an adjustment. You're going to have to bring somebody up to stop me from running. You know, we were talking last night with Bill Finley about the Eagles, the worst tackling cornerbacks I've ever seen on anybody's professional team, simply cannot and will not tackle. Well, you know, in the NFL, a lot of times those corners are required to fill off tackle. You got that gap responsibility on run. Well, that's why the Eagles are not successful, simply because their corners will not tackle. So back to what we were talking about. If I keep running the ball down your throat, eventually your safeties and linebackers and corners are going to have to come up and field to stop me from running. Now I'm able to throw the football. I'm not going to be wide open. The receiver's not going to be wide open, but he's going to have a lot more space between him and that defender because somebody is up trying to stop a run. So for those coaches that are out here, there's a reason why the play action work real well in the NFL. And the play action never worked if you don't have any success running the football. There's no reason for you to run a play action because nobody's coming up because what they have up front is stopping you from running the ball. I was sitting there when you were talking, I was thinking about nobody passed the ball better than Dan Marino when he was playing. But, you know, they didn't go to the Super Bowl.
Dan
because
San Diego. You remember, think about it.
Don Cariel. Al Cariel.
Well, I hate to say it, Ricky, Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I mean, for all the yards Peyton has thrown for
you can't
all the touchdown
run it.
Passes. Brett Favre.
Can't run it. I'm going to just,
how many
just if all you can
Brett
do is
Favre.
Throw it, I'm going to just bring in extra defensive backs. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to bring in an extra safety, an extra DB.
And, you know, Coach, when people say, it gets harder to throw the ball down the field when you get inside their 30 because all of a sudden, the sideline and the end line become an extra defensive back. I mean, there are three additional defenders. And the truth of the matter is so many routes, you know, when I was playing ball, and actually, frankly, when I was coaching high school football, we had set routes for receivers. Well, they don't anymore. The quarterbacks are expected to see the defense, the defensive backs will give, either inside or outside leverage, which means if they're going to be in a position, they're going to force you where they want you as a receiver to go. Otherwise, they're going to be right in there, and the ball has to be thrown perfect to beat that coverage. But for the most part, you know, you see teams getting inside the 20, they're going to go and, you know, try to create that inside leverage, pushing the receiver to the sideline, because it does two things. One, it allows the corner or the safety, whoever's in that man coverage, to use the sideline as an extra defender, but it also gives them the opportunity to come up and run support as well. You know, whereas if they're allowing the inside routes, then they're just chasing people across the field. So the truth of the matter is, it is easier for the defense to dictate to the offense what they want to do passing, because they're part of that decision-making process by how the coverages that they present. And the pros are pretty good at disguising their coverages. They're pretty good at making you think you got a man under, where you're just playing a straight side underneath. And, you know, again, most offensive series in the NFL are stopped by a penalty or by some mistake on offense, a misread, a wasted down. Now, unfortunately, with the Panthers, I believe last year that they stopped themselves, frankly, with their second down play selection. I thought that was, you know, all I heard was this guy, Chud, I mean, offensive wizard. Well, he didn't look like a wizard to me this past season. The truth of the matter is, the Panthers, for 7 or 8 games, did not look like a team that really had any clue what it really wanted to do on offense, other than be a traditional NFL offensive eye-type team or one-back type team. And I didn't think they took advantage of Cam Newton's skill set, what he could do with the ball, what he could make you do when he had the ball. And, you know, I mean, and that's happened really 2 seasons in a row, where the Panthers are winning games late, and everybody says those are meaningless wins. There's no such thing as a meaningless win, okay? Every win is special. And when people say, I hope they lose so they can draft higher, are you serious? Who really wants their team to lose? But back to the point, I digress. You know, Ricky, it really doesn't matter what you do as long as what you're doing suits the talent that you've got. And you've got to be willing to let professional athletes do the things that they're capable of doing. And I think the Panthers did not do a good job of that last year. We got about, I'm looking up here because they've been getting on me about us not finishing well, so we're going to finish a little better tonight, Coach. It appears that we have 3 minutes left in this show. I'm going to give you all 3 of those minutes.
We were talking about just the Panthers in general. It for the most part, it's still a young organization. You know, just like any other organization, when you start, you have some growing pains. But, you know, I'm hoping that they continue to try and get better. Not just settle for, because they're making money. Not just settle for making money, but be genuinely interested in bringing a championship team to this city, or having a championship team in this city, and hopefully a Super Bowl. And I think with this draft, and, you know, this is probably not their best draft, but this draft, they made an effort to try to get a little bit of everything that they needed. Now, you know, we're hearing rumors that they probably looking at maybe selling the team, moving the team someplace else. I'd be shocked when you look at from a financial standpoint. You know, you say, well, you know, the stadium is empty out there. Late in the third quarter, the stadium's empty. The stadium was never full. It was raining. The stadium was never full. Whether the stadium was ever full or not, Panthers sold tickets. They already have that money. They'll take a hit in their concessions, but not in ticket sales, because I would like to think that Charlotte and the surrounding area genuinely support their team. If I'm somebody looking to purchase a team like the Panthers, the last thing on my mind is moving them out of Charlotte, because I already know what this market can do. I know what this market can do. Moving them someplace else, that's a crapshoot, you know. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. We talked about passing. As
as the field gets smaller, the closer I get to the goal line, it becomes a space thing. That wide receiver don't have as much space to maneuver. I don't have as far to go to intercept that ball or to make a tackle or to knock that pass down. So, again, if once I get down inside the red zone, which is the 20-yard line, if I don't have a good running game and I'm playing Joe Ledford, I know Coach Ledford is going to take out linemen and bring in corners and safeties because he can stop me with three down linemen.
Well, Coach, that's all the time we have tonight because we are down to 3 seconds. Joe Ledford, Ricky Clark, we'll see you next Tuesday at 8 o'clock on Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio, WDCU. We're gone.